a very special kavod to have been asked by Rebbetzin Wagner and her children to come to speak to all of you in honor of someone that we all loved and we all admired, Rav Faiva Wagner, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. When I was a little boy, I grew up in Kew Gardens. I came here when I was 7 years old. My father was a mohel. And because my father was a mohel, I used to go with him to many, many brisin. And I would get to know the Rabbonim. One of the Rabbonim that we got to know, especially, we would go there many times for Shabbos brisin, was Rabbi Lubin in the Young Israel of Forest Hills. Those of you who had the schus to know that wonderful, kind, edel gentleman knew that he was the Rav of Rabbonim. So fine, so edel, so beloved, so respected. And you know, it's almost impossible for anyone to follow in a tremendous Rav's footsteps. You have a Rav that's beloved by a community, who in the world can take over and fill his shoes? But I have an aunt, her name is Fegi Schoenig. She's a favorite aunt of mine, and she has lived in Detroit for many, many years. And I remember when Rabbi Wagner came, I called my aunt and I said, "Who is this Faiva Wagner?" She said, "Just give him time, you'll see he'll become the most beloved Rav in Queens." And as Rabbi Welcher mentioned, not only was he from the most beloved Rabbonim, but he was from the most respected Rabbonim. One of the things that struck me about him, and we had time to talk many, many times at Brisson, our children were in the same class. The only thing I didn't like about Rabbi Wagner coming to New York was in 1983, you see, I was positive when my son was in the 7th and 8th grade, he was going to win all the awards. Well, he was, except then Chaim Wagner came. So he got valedictorian, salutatorian, anything you wanted, Chaim Wagner what? But it's okay, it's not bad to be second. Davis is also, you know, not bad. But I remember when we used to talk, when Rabbi Wagner and I used to talk, the thing that struck me most about him, many of you know that obviously I've written many, many stories and I tell stories. We would be at a bris, and it was just a few minutes before the bris, and he would tell me, "Do you have a good story that you've been writing or hearing?" And I would tell it to him, and it was a very moving story, and all of a sudden you saw tears coming down on his cheeks. And he was such a sensitive person, and he had no busha to show his sensitivity and his emotion. And every single time when I would tell him a moving story, always with the tears and always with such emotion, it was just incredible. B'chitzonius, he didn't look like that type of person, but his heart was as soft as butter. And that's, to me, that was the most wonderful thing about him, his caring and his sensitivity. Another thing that struck me, we both have a mutual friend. His name is Rabbi Avram Cohen. Rabbi Avram Cohen in Eretz Yisrael, who runs a kollel for halacha. It's called the Kollel Nishmas Yisrael. And I remember when Rabbi Wagner had an opportunity to have a sabbatical, that's exactly where he went. He went to learn, to sit and learn a whole year. There are a lot of other things that a person can do in a sabbatical. Travel, see the world, relax a little bit. But this was his relaxation. He went to learn in the Kollel Nishmas Yisrael by Rabbi Avram Cohen, who was absolutely nispoil from him. Of course, those of you who have daughters in Shevach know that Rabbi Wagner taught halacha for many, many years. And my wife always used to come back and tell me how the girls were just so nispoil about his clarity. You know, you can't help but think, Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, we all know the great Rosh Yeshiva, was just nifter just less than 2 weeks ago. And Rav Faiva was very, very close to Rav Shmuel Birnbaum. And they had a mutual love for each other because they were kulei Torah. Rav Shmuel spoke close to an hour at the hesped of Rav Faiva Wagner, those of you who remember it. Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, Bekoide Ba'atzmai, came to be Menachem Oval and spent tremendous amount of time by the Wagners because he was this type of person. If I remember correctly, I once heard that he gave more than 20 shiurim a week, whether it had to do in the Young Israel, what it had to do in Shevach, and it had to do by the Vad of Queens. He was a person that was so beloved and so broad. There was just one other thing that I didn't appreciate about him, and that was, you know, sometimes Rabbanim get together. I'll never forget, there was the Young Israel of Great Neck. Rabbi Lerner and I and Rabbi Wagner were standing, and I don't know how the discussion came to be that we all love to play racquetball. So we decided, you know what, let's go play racquetball together. So I thought for sure, you know, Rabbi Lerner and I are more skinny guys, and you know what Rabbi Wagner looked like, right? There was no way that he was going to win, and he slaughtered the daylights out of both of us, and I never played him again. I don't know how he moved on that court. It was just incredible. As Rabbi Welcher said, he was a person that was respected. And of course, when we come to a Yahrzeit Shir, we have to remember him. But the idea really is, how does a person live on? He lives on when people follow his drachim. And it occurred to me to choose a topic that Rabbi Wagner would have appreciated. And that was the topic of menschlichkeit, of being a mensch. Because that's what he was more than anything else. He was a person that was ma'uravim abriyos, people that were religious, people that were not religious, they could all relate to him. So I want to share with you something very interesting. In the Tells Yeshiva, Rav Motel Katz, the Rosh Yeshiva, every year, the first shmuz that he would give to the Bochrim was this pasuk. He would quote the pasuk in Malachim, Aleph, Perik Beis, Pasuk Beis. David HaMelech is talking to his son, Shlomo. And David HaMelech realizes that he's going to pass away. No one lives forever. And he wants to give his son advice. And he says like this, Anochi hoylech b'derech kol ha'aretz. I'm going to go the way of all men. V'chazakta v'hayisa le'ish. You should be a mensch. You should be a man. You should be a person. Derech eretz kodma l'teira. That's what Rav Motel Katz tried to bring out. As great as a person is in Teira, that keli is not a keli that can be presented to Klal Yisrael unless it's with Derech Eretz Kodma L'Teira. And that's what Rav Motel was trying to tell the Bochrim. You're coming to a yeshiva, you're beginning to learn at the beginning of the Zman. Don't forget, V'chazakta V'yisa L'ish. A person has to be a mensch. And if there was anything that Rabbi Wagner was, he was that mensch, that wonderful, wonderful person. It's interesting. Rav Palm used to carry with him many times in a jacket pocket, and surely people saw it who came to his home in Kensington on his desk. He had a little card, like an index card. And in there, on that card was written from the Goyen, something that the Goyen wrote and is printed in the Sefer Evan Shlema. Iker avoidas ha'odam bo'olam hazeh hu lesaken hamidos. The Iker, the primary purpose in the world that a person comes into this world is to correct his midos. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight. I've chosen a topic so that all of us tonight, when we leave this Beis Medrash, that we'll be able to be better people. We'll be able to incorporate things in our lives that will make us better people. And when we do those things that we are going to talk about tonight, we'll think back about Rabbi Wagner and think what he would have done in these situations. And that will make us all better people. A number of years ago, there was a survey that was done by a secular magazine, the Reader's Digest, and they called it a survey of human relations. And the first thing that they came up with was that 70% of people in the United States who they interviewed admitted that they are more rude and more nasty and more impatient than they were 10 and 20 years ago. 70% admitted it. And so therefore what they did was that they took three tests. And they took these tests in 35 countries across the world, wherever the Reader's Digest is printed. And these tests, one was called the door test, the second was called the document drop test, and the third was called the clerk test. The door test was, and this was all planned, they would have some people that would be carrying a lot of packages and they would walk towards a door and see if the person who was there in front of them, if they would hold the door open. Wanted to see how many people would do that. The document drop test would be if somebody would be carrying a whole stack of papers or loose leaf papers or books, and then in the middle of a store they would drop it. And then they would see how many people would turn around or would just walk by and just pick it up. And the third test was they would buy something in a store and see how often the clerk behind the counter said thank you for making that purchase. So they raided all the cities. And it is shocking to find out which was considered the kindest and the most respectful city in all these 35 places. New York was number one. And if New York is number one, we are in trouble. Because we know New York, right? Could you believe that? It's hard to believe. New York was considered the most courteous place to live. New York was first. I'm not going to go all through 35. Zurich was second. Toronto was third. I see here Rabbi Grumblatt, so I'm sure he had to do with elevating the standards in Toronto, right? Warsaw was eighth. Paris was 19th. The worst place is a place where none of us will ever go. The 35th place was Mumbai, India. So I want to share with you a very interesting story. A story that struck me. And I want to give you some history about this story just so that we have a good feel for how this story developed. When Reb Chaim Oizer was a very young man, he was 9 or 10 years old, Rabbi Saul Salanter came to his city where he was living, and he gave a shiur. And Rabbi Saul Salanter asked Akasha, and nobody could give an answer. And then he gave an answer, and after the shiur, Reb Chaim Oizer, who was all of 9 or 10 years old, came up to him and brought him a raya from a Tosfos, a Masechta Shavuos, and a Rosh, and another Masechta. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was absolutely nispoil at the genius of this child. And it's interesting, the bracha that he gave him. He kissed him on his head, and he gave him a bracha, you should be zeicha to have a good shidduch. That was the bracha that he gave him. He saw that this is a genius, a great Talmud Chacham, and that was the bracha that he gave him. Years later, Rabbi Chaim Oizer was read a shidduch with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's granddaughter, his daughter's daughter. And they asked Rabbi Saul Salanter, "Do you ever hear of this young man?" And he wrote a very famous letter. He said, "I know that he's a great Talmud Chacham of Eshtet and Pasik in a totally different context. As biti nosati le'ish hazeh, my daughter I gave to this mensch." He said, "I know that he's a Talmud Chacham. Find out if he's a mensch." Of course, that's not the pshat in the pasuk, but that was the melitza that he wrote. As biti nosati, if I give over my daughter to someone, it has to be l'ish hazeh, it has to be to a mensch. Of course, they found out Rabbi Chaim was a great mensch, and obviously he got married to the granddaughter of Rabbi Saul Salanter. At that wedding, Rabbi Saul Salanter gave him a becher. He gave him a gift. Years later, when Rabbi Liel Dessler got married, Rabbi Chaim Moshe gave him that becher as a gift. And that's what I want you to hear, the history. The history was that the Becher started by Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. It was given to Rabbi Chaim Oizer. And Rabbi Chaim Oizer gave it to Rabbi Liel Dessler. Many of us certainly know Rabbi Liel Dessler was the person who built up the Kollel and Gateshead with Rabbi David Dryan, and he changed the face of Torah and Gateshead, changed the face of Torah in England and all of Europe, a tremendous person. And eventually he came to be the Mashgiach and Ponovich. He moved to Eretz Yisrael the last years of his life. A remarkable thing happened when Rabbi Liel Dessler's wife was Nifter. They were sitting Shiva, and then it came Friday afternoon. So Friday afternoon, Rachmana Litzlan, a person sitting Shiva, so they stopped the Shiva early. So there was a bacher there that was cleaning up and putting away the chairs and setting up the table and setting up the Shabbos table as he usually did for his Rebbe, Rabbi Liel Dessler. And he takes out the becher and he sets it on the table, and Rabbi Liel Dessler says to him, "Don't use this becher. Take a different becher. If in the break front there's a different becher, take that one." And this bacher was surprised. They use this becher every week. And what difference does it make which becher you use? I mean, why would it bother Rebbe Liel Dessler what becher you use? But if that's what the Rebbe wants, so he's not going to say anything. So fine. So he used that becher. After the Suda, when everybody left, so this bacher, who for some reason doesn't want that I should say his name, is one of the great Rosh Hashivas today in Eretz Yisrael, but of course I'll honor that. He went over to Rabbi Liel Dessler and he said, "Rebbe, like, what difference was it what becher we used?" So he said like this. He said, "You know, when we were in England, I always used this becher. We used this every week. And my wife was very proud of it. After all, it came from her side of the family, from Rabbi Chaim Oizer and Rabbi Saul Salanter. But then when we moved to Eretz Yisrael, I found out that the Chazon Ish held that you're supposed to use a larger size becher. So I felt that here we're living in Bnei Brak, the Chazon Ish is the Gadol Hador, the Chazon Ish has a bigger shear, so it's only covered if we're in Bnei Brak that we should use a larger becher. So the first week that I was in Bnei Brak, I used a different becher. After Kiddush, my wife turned to me, she said, 'What happened? How come you didn't use our regular becher?' So I said to her, 'Well, you know, the Chazon Ish is becher. Here we're in Bnei Brak, it's covered for the Chazon Ish.' So she said to me, 'Hey, if it was good enough for Rabbi Saul Salanter and it's good enough for Rabbi Chaim Moshe, it should be good enough for us.' So I used it. From then on, I used it every single week. That's what my wife wanted. That's what I did. But now that she passed away, so I figured, okay, now it's proper that I should use the Chazon Ish Shir Becher. Now, I loved that story. I couldn't get over the Shalom Bias in that story. And you know, before I ever print a story or tell a story, so Rabbi Welcher and others who know me from Kew Gardens know that we have many people at the house for Shabbos. So I tested out the story, and it was incredible. Every man loved this story. Every woman hated it. And every woman said the same thing. The body's not even cold yet. What is he switching the becher for? And I said, what are you talking about? You know, like, it's so sensitive. He used the becher. He didn't want to use it. And every woman hated it. So I remember I was going to print it in one of the Maggid books, but I went to Rav Nosson Sherman, and I said, you know, what should I do with this story? The men love it, the women hate it. So he said, you know, listen, it's a great story. Of course, he's a man. So, you know, it's a great story. You should print it, but just explain it. But, you know, I didn't want the book only to be bought by half a Klal Yisrael, so I didn't print it. Until Jonathan Rosenblum wrote that masterpiece on Rebbe Eliyahu Dessler, and he wrote a magnificent thing about Rebbe Eliyahu Dessler, what happened the day of the Levaya of his wife. I could not get over this. The day of the Levaya of his wife, Rebbe Eliyahu Dessler, before he went out to the Levaya, he went back to his room, and he started polishing his shoes. So one of his Talmidim said, Rebbe, you're going to a Levaya. What are you polishing your shoes? So he said, because my wife always used to say that whenever I appear in public, I have to appear immaculate. Oh, so that means that even after his wife passed away, he's still concerned for her feelings. So the fact that he switched to Becher was not because he wasn't sensitive to her feelings. Chas v'sholom. Adarabah. He was so sensitive to her feelings, that's why he polished his shoes, and that's why he used the Becher while she was alive. But he felt out, covered to the Chazon Ish. That's what's considered a mensch. That's considered an extraordinary person. If we had to describe, what does it mean to be a mensch? I believe being a mensch means the act of being a kind, caring, sensitive person who thinks of others besides themselves. And I think that if we would keep this in mind, as Rabbi Wagner often did, not only what you want, but how do you relate to other people? What is the sensitivity? How do you appear to other people? I think we would act totally different. I want to tell you a story that happened in one of the neighborhoods that we all know about, but I don't want to say where because you might recognize the person. There was a woman who lost a husband. The woman is in her 80s. He was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. And they had a very, very wonderful marriage. They were very close. They lived together for many, many wonderful years. It's a big Talmud Chacham. I went to be Menachem Oval, happen to be somewhat related to them now. And I come and I'm talking to his sons, his grandchildren. Then, of course, I went in to talk to the Rebbetzin, to the Almona. I'm talking and all of a sudden I see a woman walk in with an orange hat and an orange dress and a big feather in her hat as if she's going to a Halloween party. Now, that's not how you go to be Menachem Oval someone. If you're on the way to a chasana, you don't go in. Where's your sensitivity? You're dressed to kill. You don't go in that way. That's not how you go to be Menachem Oval someone. But that was not the worst. The worst was she was sitting and talking to the Rebbetzin, and the woman is talking about her husband, and all of a sudden, this lady decked out in orange gets a cell phone call, and she answers it in front of the woman who's sitting Shiva. I'm telling you, it took all my self-control not to pick her up and throw her out the window. How does a person not have sensitivity in front of Avelin? I mean, cell phones have literally taken over our lives. Do you know what Rav Moshe Wolfson from Tervadas said? He said, anybody who has a cell phone, he doesn't know how they can make a bracha in the morning Shalo Yasani Ovid. So, it's incredible. So, forget about Brisson and Chasanas. But by Nichum Avelim, I mean, 10 years ago, we all managed without cell phones. Even doctors managed without cell phones 10 years ago. So, okay, fine, a fellow's a doctor, a fellow's an atzola, fine, he needs a cell phone. But where's the sensitivity? Where's the menschlichkeit? I'm still trying to figure out a way how there should be an announcement in every morning in shul. I can't figure out if it should be before kabbonis or before brachas. that somebody, the gabbai, should get up. Everyone should shut their cell phones. It's hard to believe, but they are actually, there's a guy who swears that he saw this in one of these shuls, you know, like in a Landau's type of shul, that a guy actually was davening Chazaras Hashatz and got a vibrate, and he picked up his phone and he was looking at it as he was Chazaras Hashatz. I mean, we've lost our minds. I'll tell you, the ones who really lost their minds, those are the guys with the Bluetooth, who you can't see the Bluetooth, but they're still walking in the street talking. You ever see them in the airports? They look literally like they're insane. They're talking to themselves. And if you happen to be in a waiting area by the plane, so you're listening, you know, you can't help but overhear, what are they talking about? It's Narishkeit. It's an Irish cake. And you know what the worst is? Sometimes if you ever see people, you know, husbands or wives, they want to be so wonderful. They're walking together, right? So he's on one cell phone, she's on the other, and they're taking a walk. Who are they talking to, each other? It's incredible. Cell phones have taken over our lives. It's a lack of menschlichkeit. And certainly in a house of Nichama Velim, one of the things I think that's so important, legaba menschlichkeit, and this is also, I know people that complain about this. Everyone who makes a simcha. How do you not return a card that you're coming or not coming to a chasana? Or you're not coming to a bar mitzvah? I know somebody recently who had to make a chasana, was making a chasana 3 days before the wedding they were calling. They made 60 calls to find out, is the person coming? Is the person not coming? You know if you're not coming. So right, you're not coming, right? You're coming to the simchas chasana v'kala. Nobody can go to all the chasanas today. It's impossible. And the truth is, you shouldn't be going to every single simcha. It's impossible. Baruch Hashem, Klal Yisrael has grown. But with decency is to let the person know so that they can plan ahead. That's part of decency. So why does this happen? Why are people so insensitive? So selfish? You see in lines, it's unbelievable. People cut in front of lines. You know, I have the opportunity to travel. It's just not to be believed. Grown people cutting in lines, you know, to get on a plane. And how many people in Monticello, Rahman al-Itzlan, make such a chilal Hashem. You know, a whole winter is so docile and liberty in a Monticello. And then what happens in the summer? And all these storekeepers, they all come and they all have these meetings and they all complain about all the Jews who come, you know, who take six items, and you know, and they go on the four-item line. And then they cut in front. You know, we have no patience. We have to learn to slow down. We have to learn to think of others besides ourselves. So why do these things happen? So I'll tell you why I believe they happen. And I think that we have to begin readjusting our thinking. And I'll tell it to you with a very interesting story. There was a very choshev rov in Borough Park many, many years ago. Some of you certainly had the schus to know him and to see him. I remember Rav Shalom Shradron introduced me to him. He looked like a malach elikim, Rabbi Eliezer Kirzner. Rabbi Eliezer Kirzner was such an edela, fine Talmud Chochem, such a wonderful person. And he was once, he told this to Rav Shalom, who told it to me. He was once visiting with Rav Elia Lapian in Kfar Chassidim. So he stayed overnight. They knew each other from Lita. So the next morning, they're about to go to shul. And he wakes up in the morning and he sees that Rav Elia Lapian is standing by the window and he's looking out. And he's looking out at the yeshiva, and he's repeating a pasuk. And Rabbi Eliezer Kirzner is trying to hear, what pasuk is he saying? So he just walked up like behind him. He didn't want to interrupt him. He didn't know if he's davening or saying something. And he hears him saying this pasuk, V'loy sovi toyeva el beisecha. Do not bring an abomination into your house. That says in Dvarim Zayin pasuk Chavav, it's talking about Avodah Zarah. So, and Rabbi Eliezer Kirzner is saying it again, V'loy sovi toyeva el beisecha. And he can't understand this, Rabbi Kirzner. What is Rabbi Elia Lapian saying? And you know, sometimes when somebody stares at you, after a while, you get that feeling. So he turns around, Rabbi Elia, and he sees that Rabbi Kirzner is there. He says, Uyve, did I wake you? I'm sorry. He says, no, but what are you saying, Rabbi Elia? He says, you see over there, we're going to go daven in the shul in a few minutes. See, it's a big oilam in the shul. And they all wait for me by Shema. And they all wait for me by Shema Nesra. And when you have such a choshiva oilam that's waiting for you, a person could become a bal gaiva. And it says in Pasik, Toyavas Hashem kol gevalev. It's an abomination to Hashem, anybody who's a big shot, anybody who's a bal gaiva. So I'm saying this Pasik, listen how he types it. V'loy sovi toyeva el beisecha. Don't bring that abomination of gaiva into your home. Toyavas Hashem kol gevalev. You know why most of us are impatient?
You know why most of us are nasty? Because we believe we're God's gift to mankind. Most of us here think that the whole world evolves around ourselves. And so therefore, everybody owes you everything. So of course, you have to go first, and you have to be served first, and you have to be spoken to nicely, and you have no patience with anybody, because it's all gaiva. Because a person is convinced that he's King Tut. And there's a big difference between gaiva and self-esteem. I'm a big believer in self-esteem. We all have to have self-esteem. Self-esteem means that you feel you could accomplish something, that you could do the job right. That's what but there are a lot of people who could do the job right. You have to believe in yourself. The Tzidkas HaTzadik says, you have to believe in Hashem, you have to believe in the Torah, you have to believe in yourself. That's the third thing that you have to believe in. You have to have self-esteem, but it doesn't mean that you're the only one who can do things. There are many, many capable people. Rabbi Wagner was among them, but you didn't feel inferior around him unless you're playing racquetball. But otherwise, you felt like an equal. And that's the godless of a great person. He doesn't make you feel, he doesn't look down at you. He doesn't make you feel inferior. As a matter of fact, it's interesting. The Or HaTzadikim has many, many essays on many topics. The first topic that the Or HaTzadikim writes about is the Inyan of Gaiva. He writes, "Hagaiva goyremes sheloyi yasavlon lizboil ol habriyos." Gaiva makes it so that you have no toleration. You can't tolerate anybody. Vein tzorech laharich, and we don't have to add bepchisas, the lowliness of somebody who has no patience for anybody. That's known for everyone. And he says that's why the first chapter, the first essay in the Or HaTzadikim deals with gaiva. So how are we going to work on ourselves? And I believe the answer is two words. If every one of us can adapt this midah tonight, we will change how we live and we will change the attitude of people that live around us. And that is hakaras hatoiv, saying thank you. When you begin to say thank you to people, you begin to realize that a lot of people are doing wonderful things for you. How many people go over to the Balkaira and say thank you for laning? Any one of us who has ever laned or has children, or if you're a wife and you see how your husband prepares the laning, it takes hours. Does anybody ever say anything to the Balkaira unless he made a mistake? All of a sudden, if the guy makes two mistakes before Shani, everybody's listening. Because you know this guy's in for the ride, right? Because if he made two mistakes by Shani already, you know by the Shri what he's going to look like. Does anybody ever go to say, how many people say Yasha Koyach to a Baal Tefillah? You didn't have to daven, he davened. Okay, so fine. Say Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, you go over. Because you realize that he prepared a lot. But there are many people who do services for us, even if they get paid. One of my favorite stories is about this cute little kid who comes in to a store with his mother in the fruit store. And the man behind the counter gives the little boy a banana. So the mother says, what two words do you say to the nice man behind the counter? So the little boy says, peel it. Of course, because the kid never heard thank you in his life. Do you know that Rav Pam, when there was a parlor meeting for Torah Das, he would go into the kitchen and he would thank the hostess. Who's the one who put all the food together? Who set up the beautiful tables that you always see at a parlor meeting? Wasn't the husband. If anything, he made 10 calls. You know, the yeshiva made the calls. It's the wife that did everything. You ever thank her? There are women who can tell you, Rav Pam would comment about the artwork that's hanging in the house. When it was at Termasera and Aguda convention, Rav Pam, after the convention, used to go into the kitchen to thank the kitchen staff. When was the last time you ever thanked a waiter or a waitress? I always thank the pilot. I mean, after 9/11, it's hard to get up to the pilot. But, you know, the guy brought you up, right? Thank God he brought you down. We hear stories. How do you not thank a pilot? How do you not thank anybody that does things for you? I'll tell you something remarkable about Rav Pam, who was the ultimate Edel Yid. He was in Torah Das for many, many years. Barry Katz and I remember him for many years. And what happened was he was offered a position to get a Rosh Yeshiva, a Chosheva position in Eretz Yisrael. This was already when he was Rosh Yeshiva in Torah Das, and he was famous and he was known. So Rav Pam said, Torah Das gave me a job when nobody was going to give me a job. When I was a young man, they gave me a job to be a Rebbe. And I worked myself up the ranks. So now that I became famous and everybody knows me, I'm going to take it out on Tevet Das and I'm going to leave them. They were the ones who gave me the job when I needed it. So where would be my Hakaras HaToiv? Shelley Lang, this is not an advertisement for Shelley Lang. Shelley Lang is a wonderful musician, as many of you know. So when he had a baby boy, he named him Schneier. So everybody was surprised. Schneier, why? He never learned in Lakewood. So at the bris, he said a remarkable thing. He said, you know, many, many Rosh Hashivas come to weddings, right? And they have to leave. They're all very busy. So they stay for the first dance and then they leave. Every single wedding, he said, that Rav Schneier was ever at, before he left, after the first dance, he would come to the band and he'd always thank me for playing. What was the last time you ever said thank you to a band leader? The level, he said, oh, they're playing so loud. Rock music they're playing. That's Jewish music. Right? The older we get, the more rock it gets, right? So that's the only thing that you ever say to them. Do you ever think of saying thank you? But that's what great people are. So I want to tell you a remarkable story. An amazing story. I don't know if any of you travel in LaGuardia, Air Canada. So I have the opportunity, Baruch Hashem, to travel in different places. So if you go to the Air Canada terminal in LaGuardia, it's a big U. So you go through security. And then there are about 40 different gates. Now, my gate is always gate 40. I don't know why. That's the mazel. It's always the last one. I remember recently I came to an airport. I forgot where it was. And I had gate 1. I couldn't believe it. I have gate 1? Of course, I went through security. Gate 1 started all the way at the other end. That's that airport, that's where gate 1 started. Fine. So good. I go through Air Canada. And I'm, you know, down at the corridor. I'm on the way to Toronto. And I'm sitting there with my laptop or whatever. And, you know, I'm just waiting, you know, for people to board the plane. All of a sudden, I see everybody's looking up. And everybody's head is turned. You know, all of a sudden, everybody's head is turned. So, you know, after a while, you get the feeling. You look, and there's two security guards. They're walking through every gate. And they're looking for Osama. They're looking for somebody. Something is happening. And everybody's watching. Where are they going? And they come to our gate, and they walk over to me. Let me tell you. Everybody's watching. And two security guards come over to you. It's not pleasant. Excuse me, officer says, can I help you? And the guy says, yeah. He takes out a cell phone and he says, is this yours? I said, no, officer, I have mine. I always keep my left pocket. I take a look. It's not there. I can't believe it. What do you mean? It's not there. How can it not be there? I take a look. It's my cell phone. I say, officer, that's my cell phone. I can't believe it. How did you get it? He said, well, because when you went through security, you had, you know, so many different things you were carrying and you forgot it there. I said, you know, I've got 375 numbers programmed. You know, I can't thank you enough. You know what it would have meant to go and now reprogram in a new phone? I said, but I just want to ask you something. Take a look. There's 2,000 people in this terminal. How'd you find me? So I thought for sure the guy was going to say, because you're the only guy with a black hat. That's what I thought he would say. He said, do you remember what you said to us when you walked through the gate? I said, no, what'd I say? He said, you said to both of us, thank you for being here. He said, thousands of people walk by security every day. Not one person says thank you. You said thank you. We were going to find you if you were the last guy in the terminal. Could you imagine? Forget about the Kiddush Hashem involved. Oh, don't we feel safer because they're there? What kind of job do they have? Would you like to smell 5,000 pairs of socks a day? And that's what they're doing. And they're there because of us, right? So don't they deserve a thanks? Isn't there an element? Okay, so all the time you read articles that it's not as safe as you think that it is. But it certainly is. There's a certainly, the removal of certain mechshalites, they certainly find many, many different things. And people certainly are more careful. So don't we owe them a thanks? Another way I believe that we have to begin being sensitive is if we just watch some of the messages that Chazal tried to give us about being sensitive to other people. This is one of the most remarkable things that I've ever heard. I know that Rav David Leibowitz, who really was the founder of the Yeshiva Chofetz Chaim, passed so much.
By the way, this has nothing to do with the speech, but I just want to tell you, I can't get over, if you ever go to Chofetz Chaim Yeshiva, right, you know, just a couple blocks from here, and, you know, they're all Balei Midas. That's really what they exemplify in. You know what the code, when you have to walk in, I don't know if this was done by Kivan, but, you know, when it's locked, when the door's locked, it's 2-for-1. I can't get over that. 2-for-1. I believe that, you know, Minas Shemayim, it happened that way. 2-for-1. That's what I always remember it. So I don't know who was the one who thought about it, but I don't know if it was Rav Henoch, but whatever. But it's just a beautiful Dvar Musa, even as you walk into the yeshiva. So Rav David Leibowitz once pointed out a remarkable thing. And he said, you know, sometimes a father comes home Friday night from shul, and the table's not set. You know, the challah's there, and the wine is there, but, you know, the silverware's not there, the napkins aren't there, and the kids are running around, and the father gets upset, and he embarrasses his wife, or embarrasses the kids. And he doesn't realize that the challah that's there and is being covered is teaching him a very, very important lesson. And that's one of the reasons. And when you look at the table Friday night, this Friday night, you should mention this. And this is mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, or Chaim Simen Reish Ayin Aleph Siftes. Tzorich shetehei mapa al ha-shulchan tachas apas u-mapa perusa al gabov. The cover has to be on top and on bottom of the challah. Why does the challah have to be covered? So some of us know because of the mon, but you know what? There's another reason. Betur b'shem ha-Yerushalmi. The tour says in the name of Yerushalmi, shelo yireh ha-pas boishtoi. The bread, the challah, shouldn't feel embarrassed, because normally in the week, if you have bread and wine, you have to always make the bracha on the bread first. Hamaitzi goes before ha-gofen. But Friday night, because you got to make kiddush, so ha-gofen goes first. So we cover the challah, so the challah shouldn't feel bad. So Rav David said, here, we're sensitive to the challah. Shouldn't we be sensitive to each other? How do you embarrass people at a Shabbos table? I never used to let my children go away for Shabbos. I always wanted to let you bring all your friends to the house for Shabbos. One Shabbos, my daughter Elisheva, I let her go for Shabbos. She wanted to go to a friend. Fine, good. So she went. She comes home, wants a Shabbos. She says, Todd, you're not going to believe what happened. I was sitting at the table Friday night. The father was yelling at all his kids. He threw everyone away from the table. The only one that was left was me and him. I didn't want to ask where the wife was. I was afraid. Can you imagine? To embarrass your children in front of their friends? That's what the pas is there. Shelo yireh ha-pas boishtoi. Here's another thing, a message from Chazal. It's lo yu'umet ki yisupra. It's not to be believed. Lo yisachroish b'shor v'chamor yachtov. You're not allowed to plow an ox and a chamor. That's klayim. An ox and a donkey can't be together. If I asked you to think of a reason, you could come up with 1,000 reasons, you'd never come up with this one. That which Adas Kanan tells us. You can't believe this. Why? Lefi shahashor malageira. Because the shor, the ox, brings up its food a second time. Umitztaher hachamor. And the poor donkey is feeling bad. Kishashemeya hashor oichel. Because it hears how the shor is eating again. He's not eating again. He's just coughing up his food and eating it again. Yeah, but the poor hamor thinks he's eating. That's why there's a din in the Torah, like sachreish b'shor v'chamor yachtov. So if you're sensitive to the chamor, kal v'chomer, how you should be sensitive to everyone else. Want to hear sensitivity? Also, one of the most wonderful svarim ever written. Of course, it's in English, but it's a sefer kodesh ad miyoid, the biography of Rabbi Yehuda Zev Segal, the Manchester Rosh Yeshiva. Tells his sensitivity incredible. He was on the way to a chasana. He turned around. He went back home. Why did he go back home? Because he forgot to wear his Shabbos hat. And he said, when you go to a chasana, you have to be dressed your best. Because the chasana and the kala, for them, that's the holiest day of their lives. So you have to dress accordingly. As if anybody's going to know. It makes a difference whether he wore his Shabbos hat or his weekday hat. The mere fact that he came was the biggest covet. He was once sitting at a Sheva Brachas and he got a call. He knew it was from a single girl. So he said, wait, I want to go into the other room to get this call. Because he knew that the girl would hear the singing at the Sheva Brachas and she might feel bad because she's still single. And so therefore, he went to the other room to take the call. And something that I heard recently, absolutely incredible. There was a girl that got engaged. Her older sister was not yet engaged. And the family who lived in Manchester, and they called the Manchester Rosh Yeshiva. They wanted he should give a bracha to the kala. So somebody in the house answered the phone. So Rav Segal said, tell them I'm not ready yet to come to the phone. I'll call them back. And he calls back
10 minutes later, and he asks to speak to the older daughter. And he gets her on the phone and he says, I know it's a difficult night for you, but I give you a bracha that you should be able to find your right zivug in the right time. And don't worry, I'll daven for you. And mitzvah Hashem, you'll find the right zivug. He said, now let me speak to the kala. He said, imagine if I would have done it the other way. If I would have spoken to the kala first, and then I would have asked to speak to the older sister. She would feel, she's second fiddle. So bedavka, he didn't take the phone. And bedavka, he called the older daughter first to make her feel special. And then he spoke to the kala. That's called sensitivity. I want to share with you this thought. Again, I heard it from a close friend of mine who's a marriage counselor. That's not the reason he's my friend, but he was the one who told it to me. It's Dr. Abba Goldman. Again, he heard it from a penach, a beautiful, beautiful shmuz. How we have to be sensitive. You know, none of us are perfect. No husband is perfect. No wife is perfect. No rav is perfect. No principal is perfect. We're all human beings. And everybody can be criticized at times. But there's a way to criticize. Listen to this. You will not believe this. You have to look this up to see it inside. Rav Henoch once mentioned this in a shmuz. It says that when Hashem was angry at Aaron and Miriam because they spoke Lashon Hara against Moshe, it says in the Pasuk, Vayomer, Shimu no devorai. Please listen to my words. Rashi says, Ein no ela Lashon Bakosha. This is Bamidbo Yudbeis Pasuk Vav. So Rashi is saying that Hashem is now going to give Musar to Aaron and to Miriam, and he's saying, please listen to me. What do you mean, please? Hashem has to say, please listen to me? Zok tisivse chachomim, af al pisha chorobom af Hashem, even though that Hashem got angry at them, mikol mokem eino ela lashon bakosha, no means please, v'diber imohem benachas, and he spoke to them kindly. She'ilu, listen to this, She'ilu hoyu dvorav bakas, if Hashem would have gotten angry at Aaron and Miriam, loy hoyu dvorav nishmoim, could you believe that? His words would not have been listened to. Could you imagine Hashem is talking to Moshe, to Aaron and Miriam, and if he gets angry, the Sifzei Chacham is telling us, they would have turned them off, kaviyochel, because nobody likes to be yelled at. You can bully your way through, maybe the child or the student will listen that time, but they'll hate you afterwards. Shimono, please listen to me. And then the Sifzei Chacham says, Kavachem the boss of Edom, Shiyu Dvorim Benachas. You have to be sensitive. You have to criticize somebody. It has to be quietly, sensitively, with sensitivity. Again, a marriage counselor once told me, you know what the three most important words in marriage are? Not those three words that you're thinking of. And not yes, my dear, either. That's not the ones. You know what the three most important words in marriage are? I was wrong. So I remember I once said this in a drasha. So I hear a husband speaking to a wife afterwards. Did you hear what he said? Don't forget, I was wrong. You should say that. That's what he tells his wife. So I want to share with you three remarkable stories. The third one I'm embarrassed to tell you, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway. But let's start with the first two. There was a pizza shop. I can't say where it was. The owner doesn't want I should say where it was. Okay, fine. It's a pizza shop. It's lunchtime. Very, very busy. A guy walks in with a trimmed beard. Very nice looking fellow. And he's about to order a pizza. And he sees behind the counter, there's a goyish fellow there, Paul. So he says to the lady behind the counter, is that Paul? He says, yeah, that's Paul. He says, I have to speak to him. He says, you can't speak to him now. You see, this place is very busy. You can't speak to Paul now. He says, no, but I have to speak to him right now. And he raises his voice. And this lady behind the counter sees this guy's not going away so fast. And you know, the people up front, you know, by the tables up front, everybody's head is turning. Why is this guy so angry all of a sudden? Okay, so she has no choice. And she calls over Paul. Paul comes to the front of the counter. And this guy with the trim beard says to him, Paul, you recognize me? He said, no, I don't know who you are. He says, Paul, take a good look. You don't recognize me? He says, no, I don't know. He says, Paul, didn't you work at this and this pizza place? We'll call it Yehuda's, right? It wasn't Shimon's. He said, didn't you work in Yehuda's pizza place? He said, yeah, how do you know that? He said, why don't you tell everybody here why you got fired from that place? So now the goy gets angry. He says, I'll tell you why I got fired, because those Jews didn't trust me. They said I stole $300. I didn't take a penny. I'm a family man. I needed that job. And those Jews didn't believe me. That's why they fired me. So this guy says, Paul, take a look at me. You don't recognize me. Because when I was working with you at that pizza shop, I had hair down to my shoulders. I'm a Baal Tshuva. You don't know what that means. A Baal Tshuva means somebody who's sorry, somebody who's repenting. Paul, I'm the guy who took the money. And I've been looking for you for the last 3 years. I had no idea where you were. And Paul's face turns white and he begins to cry. He says, I can't believe you're that same guy. He said, but you don't owe me the money. You didn't take it from me. You have to go back to that pizza shop and play there. He says, I did already. He said, but I know you lost a job because of me. And that's why I came to tell you that I'm sorry. And everybody saw, oh, that's godless. When a person can be moida, that he made a mistake and say, I was wrong, that's the greatest mensch of all. I'll tell you a story that happened in Flatbush, in the Syrian community. One of the nicest people you'll ever meet in your life. His name is Harry Ashkenazi. It's funny, his name is Ashkenazi, but he's a Sephardi. But he's a wonderful, wonderful guy. Harry tells me, a number of years ago, he was on a long line of people. He's about to go into a chasana. And you know how it is. It's a long queue of cars waiting and everybody is inching up. And he was getting impatient. You know, it was taking a very long time until they were parking all the cars. And he was in his car ready for 7 minutes. 7 long minutes he was waiting already. And the lady in front of him, she was sitting and talking and she wasn't moving up her car. So what does he do? So he, instead of blowing the horn, he takes his car and he goes in front of her and he takes her spot. And he goes in, he gets his car parked in valet and David should go off, and that was the last spot available. So now this lady, who really was ahead of him, she had to go looking through the streets in Flatbush for a parking spot. Oh boy, when she got into the wedding and she found Harry Ashkenazi, she had some choice words for him. Okay, fine. Months go by. This was in January, February. Months go by. It's now before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And as I told you, Harry is the most wonderful guy around. And he's trying to think, is there anybody that I offended in the year? Family members, co-workers. I can't think of anyone. All of a sudden, oy vey vey, I remember that lady. Now, she wasn't as religious as him. He didn't really daven in the same shul. He didn't know where she went to shul, but he knew her name. So, you know, every community has its own Yiddish phone books. So he looks up her name and he calls her up and he says, my name is Harry Ashkenazi. I don't know if you remember me, but you know, a few months ago I was in line and I took your spot and you were upset. It's before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I just want to tell you I'm sorry. You know, please forgive me. She says, Harry, you remember that from months ago? I forgot about it a long time ago. He says, no, but it really does bother me and I shouldn't have done what I did. And you know, please, I'm sorry. Just tell me that you forgive me. She said, yeah, of course. She couldn't get over it. And she was thinking, you know, she wasn't on his level of frumkeit. She didn't know you call people before Rosh Hashanah. So she starts thinking, you know, maybe there's somebody that I offended. Then she remembers, you know, PTA night. She really gave it to her daughter's teacher. And then, you know, a neighbor, she said a few things. So she started making calls. It was very nice. You know, she was calling a lot of different people that she had to get mechila from. 2 years later, Harry Ashkenazi's daughter was read a shidduch to this lady's son. And this lady, when she heard about it, she said, this is Harry Ashkenazi's daughter? The guy who's so sensitive, who months later can admit that he made a mistake and is sorry? That's the one that I want my son to go out with. And wouldn't you know, they got married, and now Harry and this lady, they share the same grandchildren. And I was at a bris in one of the Sfardisha communities. I happened to meet this guy who learns in Lakewood today, and he tells me, I know you tell that story about my mother, and I want you to know, my mother still says today, if Harry had not made that call, she never would have let me go out with his daughter. So because a guy was able to say, I made a mistake, he got a shit up for his daughter. Incredible. Now here, let me tell you a story. I'm embarrassed like anything, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway, because I think there's a great lesson here. Those of you who know me personally, have come to my house, you know that I love photography. I take pictures on Ashir. I have so many albums. Okay, now it's digital, so everything's on the computer. I don't know whatever happened to the album business. But anyway, so wherever I go, I'm always with my camera. So a number of years ago, when my children were learning in Eretz Yisrael, the boys were in the yeshiva and the girls were in seminaries. So come out every single year, we used to go to Eretz Yisrael for Sukkot. It's the greatest time in the world to be there. Anybody who's ever been there knows there's nothing like Sukkot in Eretz Yisrael. So there was a certain Rosh Yeshiva, and I just ask you not to try to figure out who it is because it's not really important. But I knew him, and I had given money to the yeshiva. I had visited him numerous times, but I never heard him speak publicly. And I heard that Chol Hamoed Sukkos at night, many yeshivas make a Simchas Beis HaSheva, there's tremendous dancing and singing. I heard that in his yeshiva he was going to be speaking that night. So I decided, fine, I'm going to go and I'll go to that yeshiva. You know, if I bring in, they'll be singing and dancing, and I'd like to hear him speak publicly. Fine. I come into the yeshiva. I had my camera with me. It was Chol Hamoed. And I walk up to where he was sitting. Now, things happened so fast that I still, to this day, cannot remember if I picked up my camera to take a picture of him or I was just holding it by my side. But before anything, he was sitting, he jumped up in front of everybody and he started yelling at me, "Was nennt mir der Bilder? What are you taking pictures here? Who needs you here with your camera? Get out of here with your camera." I was hoping that the floor would open, I would fall in, they would bury me, and that would be the end. Humiliated is not the word. I mean, I could have sworn that he knew who I was. My goodness, I was by him many times, and we had spoken, and maybe he just saw the camera and he just lost it, you know, because, and he didn't even realize who I was. I could not get out of there fast enough. I was so hurt that I did not talk about this story for a year. I couldn't get the story out of my mouth. I didn't even tell it to my wife. That's how hurt I was. I couldn't even talk about it. The next year, we went back for Sukkos. And I was driving with my son-in-law. My son-in-law happened to learn in that yeshiva previous years before. Now he was already married, living in New York. And he said to me, "You know, maybe we'll go Simchas Beis HaSheva." Of course, he doesn't know the story. I didn't tell it to anybody. He says, "Let's go to that yeshiva. We'll go to the Simchas Beis HaSheva." I said, "Yeah, I'm a little tired tonight. You know, I don't want to go tonight." So he said, I said, "But I'll tell you what, I know you want to go to your Rosh Hashiva, so I'll tell you what, I'll drive you there, and you know, if the Rosh Hashiva is there, you want to stay there, so just give me a call, and I'll pick you up, or else you take a cab, you know, we'll go home." So he says, "Okay, fine, Tom, good, I drive him," and he says, "Just wait here, you know, if he's the Rosh Hashiva is there, I'll come out and I'll tell you, and you know, then you could go, or whatever you want to do." Fine, he goes inside, he comes back 2 minutes later, the Rosh Hashiva is there. I said, "Okay, fine, good, you stay, and you know, give me a call whenever you're ready to come home." Of course, I had my camera in the car, and I started thinking to myself, you know, I shouldn't be a baby. The man is really a great person. And the Gemara says that if you can't be Oyla Regel on Yontif, so you got to go to the Gedolim, you get a bracha, you say, "Good Yontif." I have to be bigger than that. I'm going to take my camera, I'm going to stick it underneath the seat, I'm going to double lock the car. Nobody will even know that I even thought about bringing the camera. And I'm going to go inside. All I'll do is say, "Good Yontif." He'll say, "Good Yontif" to me. And I'll leave. Nothing more than that. Fine. I steeled myself, put the camera underneath the front seat, made sure the door was double locked, covered it with the whatever. Nobody could see. And I go inside. There are places dancing, you know, with those of you who have seen this Simchas Beis HaSheva's, you know, kids are hanging from the rafters. It's levadic, it's lustig, the band, the drums, the music, it's unbelievable. Fine, and he's dancing with his staff. Of course, I'm not going to go in and dance with the staff. I don't know them at all. And certainly I wasn't going to dance with him, right? That's all I need. Fine. So, I waited till he sat down. And he sat down. And I was standing on the side. And the guy's standing around. They're just watching him breathe. Just looking at him. I don't know what they're watching, but they're just looking at him. Fine. And he's sitting over there. And I'm just standing outside, just waiting, just to catch his eye, say good yontif, and I'm out of there. All of a sudden, he turns around and he sees me. And he jumps up. And he looks at me and he says, "Ich warte vor dir. I've been waiting for you." Oh, my heart fell. What's he waiting for? And then he says to me like this. He says, "The Rambam says, where you did the Aveira, that's where you have to do the tshuva. Last year, I embarrassed you. I'm asking you right here in the same spot. Please be moichel me. I made a mistake." I couldn't believe it. I said to him, "Rosh Hashiva, how could you remember? I remember, but how could you remember?" He said, "I know you were here in the summer, and I sent a message, you should come to me. You didn't come." Of course I didn't come. I thought he wanted money. I wasn't going to come. I couldn't believe he was sending a message. But anyway, I said, "Rosh Hashiva." He says, "Zetzach, Zetzach, sit right next to me." You know, now everybody's looking at me, like, who am I that everybody's looking at? And then he says to me, "Tell me you're moichel me." Then he repeats again, "The Rambam said, where you made the mistake, where you did the Avera, that's where you have to do the tshuva." I said, "Rosh Hashiva, if it wasn't a Beis Medrash, I'd give you a kiss. I just can't believe that you're asking me. Of course, I'm Michael. What's the question?" He says, "Tomorrow night in the sukkah, I'm making something special. I want you to come, and you're going to sit right next to me." That's when I realized how great the man really is. I'm nothing, nothing compared to him. The whole Olam HaTorah, that's from him. They shake when there is in his presence. And he's asking me for mechila. I'm nothing compared to. And in front of all his talmidim, he's mevaza himself. That's greatness. That's godless. When a person of that level can say that he made a mistake, and in that place where he did the avera, that's where he wants to do the tshuva. I was wrong. That's what it's all about. That's what being a mensch is all about. You don't have to be right all the time. Because you're not right all the time. As much as you think that you're right all the time. And that's what being a mensch is all about. So let's review some that we said, and we'll review with a great thought. Let's remember. That's the beginning. That's the first lesson. That's what David HaMelech wanted to leave the legacy of his son Shlomo. He should be a mensch. That's what Rav Motel Katz told the Olam Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. Derech Eretz Kodma LaTorah. Before a person learns Torah, he has to understand that the Keli, that's Machzik Brocha of Torah, that's the Indian of Menschlichkeit. Let's remember that terrible study that shows that 70% of people, and I'm sure that we're included in that, we're more nasty, we're more rude, more impatient than we were years ago. We have to realize, what does that come from? We have to remember the Edelkeit of Rabbi Leo Dessler. Rabbi Leo Dessler had that sensitivity to his wife all the years he used the Becha that she wanted, even though he felt that's a cover to the Chazon Ish. It wasn't anything wrong, it was certainly a cover thing. I guess if he would have felt it was halacha, obviously he wouldn't have been able to listen to her, but it was a derech eretz. And that's why he polished his shoes afterwards, because he respected her wishes. So we have to be able to be in control. We have to understand that many times it comes from gaiva. It's not a question of self-esteem, it's a question of gaiva. We think everything revolves around ourselves. We have to be careful. You got to be Menachem Mavel. It has to be with sensitivity. Obviously, shut your cell phones in davening. Shut your cell phones at anybody's chasana. Person goes to be Menachem Mavel, of course. Return cards. Don't cut in line. Return cards. You're going to a chasana or to a wedding. Somebody's making all these things. Let's remember how Rabbi Eliel Apian, the Godel and Musa, the great Mashkiach, he's worried about Gaiva, Leisovi Tayeva, El Beisecha. And that's why the Orchas Adikim tells us that's the first lesson that he talks about. He talks about Gaiva because that's the beginning of terrible, terrible Midas. How Rav Palm would thank the waiters and the waitresses. How Rav Palm would go into the kitchen and thank the kitchen help. How he thanked the hostess who made the parlor meeting. How Shelley Lang named his baby Rav Schneier because of the way Rav Schneier would come over to say thank you. How Rav Segel wouldn't take that call from that single girl by the Sheva Brachas because he felt her pain. How he called the older daughter first to say Mazel Tov. All these things show us the sensitivity that a person has to have. So maybe we should make up that you write every once in a while. You write a letter. You send an email of thanks to somebody. Just because somebody does something and they get, even if they get paid for it. If they did something for you, so you have to learn how to say thank you. Maybe we should mark down how many times a day we say thank you. Wouldn't be bad if you do something, everything that you do it bekvias, you write it down. It sounds silly. You write it down. Every day you got to say thank you 3 or 4 times to some other people. When was the last time you thanked your wife for a meal that she made? When was the last time a wife thanks the husband for the money that he brings home? I don't know why that was funny. Oh man, I hope that recording picked up that laugh. I always say that a woman who wants to be thanked for the challah that she makes has to thank her husband for the dough that he brings home. Again, as Rav Henoch taught us, Shimu no, that's what the Rabbeinu Shlalom, when he wants to criticize Aaron and Miriam, he says, please. Because Dibri Chachamim Benachas Neshmoim Kavayochel, of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is teaching us that lesson. Shla Yiras Apas Boishtoi, that's why we cover the challah. The shur and the chamor, le sachre, shur and chamor yachtov, because the shur here, because the chamor here, it's how the shur is eating. You see the sensitivity of the Rabbeinu Shlalom, you see the sensitivity of Torah and Halakha Chazal. Those stories with Harry Ashkenazi, the story with the fellow in the pizza shop, and the story with the great Yosh Yeshiva, who's able to admit that he did something wrong. I just want to end with 2 remarkable stories. A while ago in Lakewood, Rav Michal Birnbaum, who was the Mashgiach in Tveris Yerushalayim for many, many wonderful years, tremendous Halakha Yid, his grandson had a baby. Everyone was positive. Everyone was positive, without suffix, that this boy, the grandson of Rav Michal, would name the baby Michal after his grandfather, especially since it was the second baby. And the first baby was named after his wife's side. So surely this baby, the second baby, was going to be named after his side, and for sure it would be named after his grandfather. But they named the baby after her grandfather. And no one could believe it. So at the Suda, listen to what the grandson said. It's not to be believed. The grandson said that my Zaidi, Rav Michal, before he passed away, he knew he was passing away. He knew he was dying. He said like this. He said, I know there will be children and grandchildren that will have babies. And they'll want to name the baby after me. But I want everyone to know, he said, in case on the other side there's a grandfather who passed away, and the almana is still living, name the baby after that grandfather, so that it'll be a nachas ruach to that almana. Because his wife had already passed away. Could you imagine? The godless, it's lo yu'uma ki yisubah, a person in our generation should think like that. The man is dying, and he knows that there are going to be people that will want a name after him, but there'll be a nachas ruach to that almana. What an unbelievable insight, what an unbelievable menschlichkeit, what an unbelievable sensitivity it is of a great person. That's how we have to learn, that's how we have to think. And finally, to end on a delightful story. The Baba V'Rebbe, Rav Shlomo Halberstam, was beloved by everyone. And it happened that he went on Shushan Purim once many, many years ago when Baba was still small and it was in Crown Heights. The Manal, who told me the story, Rabbi Folman, he told me that at that time he was married 7 years, he didn't have children yet. And the Rebbe was coming to visit him Shushan Purim, so he was hoping for sure the Rebbe would give him a bracha that he and his wife would be able to have children. And they're sitting, they had L'chaim or whatever, it was the day after Purim, it was a very light mood. And the Rebbe didn't say anything, and the Rebbe's getting ready to leave. So Rabbi Folman said to me, that he said to the Rebbe, Chagimenta, as the Rebbe megem a bracha, I was hoping the Rebbe would give me a bracha that I should have children. He said, I gave you a bracha. He said, you gave me a bracha? I didn't hear. He said, no, I had something to drink. And I said, Boirei nefashais. Boirei nefashais means life should be created. So I had in mind that life should be created in this house, you should have children. So the gabbai of the Rebbe was a Rabbi Horowitz. So when he walked the Rebbe out, he said, Rebbe, what about me? I also was hoping you would give me a bracha. I said, I had you in mind. He said, you had me in mind also? Yeah, because Boirei nefashais rabbis. Rabbis means a lot. So Boirei nefashais was for the Folmans, and rabbis was, you know, for you. So Rabbi Folman told me that year he had a little girl. That year, Rabbi Horowitz had a boy, and 18 years later they married each other. Could you imagine? And now, Baruch Hashem, they share the same grandchildren. Boirei nefashais rabbis. That's what we came here tonight. The nefesh of a person stays. That reputation stays. Loi b'moisa yikach hakoil. Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld once said this, a tremendous vort. I heard it from him, but he said it from the Shevet Musar. That which we say, loi b'moisa yikach hakoil, the simple meaning is, a person doesn't take anything with him. So don't be intimidated by the wealthy people. They don't take it with him. Loi b'moisa yikach hakoil. But Rabbi Schoenfeld quoted the Shevet Musa who says, your reputation you don't take with you. If you do good, people remain with that goodness. They think about your goodness. Because in death, a person doesn't take that reputation with him. Because that reputation stays here. And if Chas V'Shalom, a person is an evil person, people don't forget that either. You can't get away with it. Because people remember. And the good that people do, that stays. And that's why we came here tonight, because Loi b'moisa yikach hakoil. Rabbi Wagner didn't take his reputation with him. He left it for us to remember. That's his legacy. That's his nefesh that he leaves over for all of us. And tonight, if we can only learn to become more sensitive like he was, and to say thank you, and to have a koras ha-toiv, and to be more of a mensch, and to be able to say I was wrong, and to be able to forgive, and to be able to be better people, then his life will still go on. And that's what we ask the Rabbeinu Shlalom, Bila Hamavas Lenetzach, the Ebeshe should wipe out all types of death. That we should be Zeicha to see in Tchias HaMesim, Rav Ivel Wagner, Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, all the other wonderful people that we've lost in the recent years and in the long past years. We should Tchias HaMesim in the coming of Mashiach. I thank you for inviting me, and I thank you all for listening.